right in saying on the low end of the lowest extreme, this measure would account for 30% and then 20% of the 30%, so that would be 6%.
Yeah.
That would be the low end.
No, she said
yeah.
Oh, this year, this is there.
Yes.
There.
About
40%
of women get mammograms. That's not the question. Not the question. Yeah. Okay.
So,
you know,
we have this twice, you know, 6 to 12 to tell you
what that. All I'm saying is of the test order, not of the people, of the test order. What percent are you capturing in this measure? And it's you don't capture under 65, so that's 60% of the mammograms approximately, or 70%. And of the mammograms in 65 plus, you don't capture the outpatient non-hospital right now by proposed, and that was said to be 80% of the study. So that if you took that,
I think there's
right.
A question before. If you choose that we include that, though that wasn't our mandate, that's your mandate.
Okay.
So we could, if we chose to approve it, we could choose to put the condition that it has to include in the denominator.
Yes.
All mammography screening exams. That's within our purview here.
Yes.
And they could, you could do that. So
then we'd be down to the 30.
It is, no, it's not 40.
It's 30. Yeah.
30.
I know.
You're correct.
Okay. And then we're back to the question, what does the measure by itself?
Yeah.
Which is where we are.
Which is where we are. So.
And you're there.
So I think we've already, let's before we turn it to formal comments from the measure developer. Let's ask if there are any more questions from the committee or comments from the committee, either on the measure itself or on the merits of the measure, a measure such as this in the absence of the other sort of the balancing measures.
Well, the devil's asking the question, thinking from the cost perspective, you're saying it's all the same as recall rate, do we need the same measure, or can they be merged together and have one measure for everyone? Because the number of measures is exploding every year that it's going to be. We had measures and measures, and when I'm practicing with patients, it's very intimidating and costs a lot for practitioners to measure all this stuff. So there's a way to save a measure and achieve the goal to be in favor of that.
All right.
This is Mike Beckus. So this measure, we're suggesting gets measured out of CMS data, right? So essentially there's no additional cost to the practice to measure. My question on the measure is, do we think that because Medicare has a more stratified population, right? You're only working 65 over, excluding the disabled. That you've taken out enough of the population bias that recall rate by itself is now substantially more meaningful and can stand on its own. Or do you still need PPV2?
Good question.
Are you saying one measure is good enough in this population?
I mean, I'm always brought up, because I work in data, it's like crawl, walk, run. And, yeah, there's a gold standard. I mean, there's a gold standard, right, where you want to know the tumors. But I mean, we'll wait for the electronic health record. It'll be here in 20 years. But from CMS's perspective, if they're trying to get close, does this narrow it enough to be worthwhile? And I don't have a view.
This is Rebecca Smith-Fyman. I was going to say very similar point. I still think it needs to be stratified by age. But if extremes of poor quality were set in this measure, then I think you could identify those extremes to take this measure standing alone.
Scott Giselle, I assume this is a facility-level measure. Is that the intent? So basically we're judging the facility and how it does its Medicare patient, how it manages Medicare patients. Right, I mean, if it's a facility level in Medicare, so so is that valuable?
This is a facility, Carl Dorsey, this is a facility-based metric. You tie it to the woman. What happens if she goes to another facility for that diagnostic exam?
It should be done. Yeah,
you can
arrange
that
up.
Yeah, their Medicare.
Okay, so that's a little reconciled.
That's a good one.
So it's the facility of the denominator, I would assume.
Okay.
But Eric, you had
Sorry, one more time. Clarification of what is good quality or bad quality is. You said you could use it for that.
If,
how?
Yes, this is Rebecca Schlefman. If a facility recalls more than 20% of their patients for additional mammography, that's a measure of poor quality in large cost. After a recall rate of 10%, you're not getting much in the way of cancer detection. So we'll give them from 10 to 20 to waste those resources. But above 20, whatever that cutoff is, that's poor quality.
So that would be the, and you would argue for then some sort of, you can binary? Because you don't want to drive it.
Some
binary? And do we have or were provided data, I didn't see it in here, that said what percent of institutions fall in that greater than 20?
It turns out the way the data were presented, were not age stratified, were not first and subsequent, ended up being very misleading. So the answer is
they do present first and subsequent. So let's finish comments from the committee, because I can't find it at this moment, but there were data on the first and subsequent.
They come up with about recall rates of about 10% with a very narrow distribution.
For
very
first
low, about 15%.
6.7, I think it was.
Yeah, they were very low, and I think
subsequent.
It's because they were not.
Okay. Let's see, Roger, then Mary, then Carl.
Yeah, Roger. So I may have missed it, but Carl earlier mentioned something that's important here, particularly if you're going to have an upset threshold for bad quality. These damaged data are at risk of being contaminated by independent events that send someone back for a mammogram, a second mammogram. And that's, I don't know what the number is, I have no idea, but it's number two.
No, it's not.
He doesn't.
The number is, the recall rate is driven by women who are normal. So the 1,000 women, the recall rate might be 150, those are normal. The concern that call rate is driven by cancer. So that's driven by a recall of one of those 5 women out of 1,000 with cancer. So the recall rate of 150 could be contaminated by one of those 1,000 of breast cancer, so instead of being 150 out of 1,000, it would be 151.
But she doesn't have, I take your point, but she doesn't have breast cancer.
She has a palpable lump.
She's got a lump.
So now it's not 5, it's 10.
She's got a fat, she's got a piece of fat.
But it's not anywhere, it's an order of magnitude prevalence lump.
So you're saying it's
not that it's not an issue, probably it's actually real, it's just that it's smaller than normal.
So this is Mary Demignani. I favor this recall type of measure over the one previously because it has a couple of things that are uniform about it. The population's more uniform, the payer's more uniform, and it's a small metric that we can start. The other one is much more broader, and it has so many variables about the institution, the population that you're looking at. So if I were to pick one of those, I think I would favor this one. That would be mine.
I'm confused, as usual, but let me ask this. What is the basic difference about the discussion we had on the other recall rate versus this as far as equating this to quality? Is there any difference in that discussion that I'm missing?
This group is age stratified.
Right.
It's age stratified, and it's easy to get. But does it still give you a quality metric?
I'm raising it as an extreme,
right.
Not as a continuous metric where there's a lot of subtlety, but as a threshold.
But you can do that with the regular recall rate, too. And as a matter of fact, you're stating only one edge of a recall. You're saying above is no good. What about 1%? Is that good?
That's not good either.
So then you shouldn't say blanket above. If you're going to do it at all, you need a range.
We're on both ends.
Okay.
What are the ranges that it's being proposed? 10 to 14?
So if you're under 10, you're no good?
Two.
So if you were 2, like you said, you have to worry
about the
pitching. 10%, the Lewin Group data, 10% involves half of the facilities not being good because their recall rates are too low, which is an interesting state of affairs.
The older people are lower. I mean, that's why it turned out that way. I mean, we found like 8.5, 8.9 in different studies that we've done over the years. Because, as you say,
but you're saying 10's not lower than 10's not good.
No, way lower.
I think we're in danger of rewriting. I mean, the fact is that, as Rebecca said, there's a range, and we can identify those ranges. And if support from this group asks us to take a look again at what's too low as well as what's too high, I mean,
this is not
a real complicated one.
What will you use as Carl Dorsey, what will you use as a gold standard to set those ranges besides just a recall rate? What would you say? Where would you pick 2, 3, 4, 9, 10, 11? Where would you pick it and why would you pick it?
When I'm ready to
do it. So why don't we finish our comments? Yeah. So I think that, and then we'll ask for formal comments from the developer, and then we can have a back and forth.
If we're going to be Steve. Setting a range, where does that data come from and has it been published? I mean, if this is proprietary information.
So we'll ask them to address that in their comments. Are there,
I mean, we talked about it at lunch, so if your recall rate is very low but your cancer detection rate is excellent, not only are you not bad, you're excellent.
Supposing you're finding stage 3, supposing you're finding stage 3, are you still excellent?
I think those cutoffs, if the purpose is to identify really low quality, they have to be set at such extreme that that's unlikely to be the case. And I would argue they have to be very wide. If the recall rate is 2%, there are problems with it, but that's how the entire Danish mammography program operates.
In the UK, I think what's about 5% that they set.
The recall rates in the UK are half of the
And they recommend below 5.
Right.
It's 5 is the upper limit. The Dutch are 1.8. But the stages of cancer
are Dutch women dying of breast cancer?
Yeah. They don't do great
job.
Well, that's exactly what we're getting at, because you need to know what you're finding.
So I'm sensing that this is a good time to ask the measure developers to give their comments, and then we can ask them specific questions afterwards.
Thanks. This is John Dean talking, and this is my second episode with Carl. That would give you a idea of my intellect.
So you've got to read all the
I think that for those of you who are not mammographers, I was somewhat, at least as a general radiologist, probably heard everything you could ever hear about mammography, and it was really very, very well done in my estimation. I want to thank the committee for looking at this, and especially thank Rebecca and Mary for your comments in support of it. Let me just say that what we're really looking at, I think, as a radiologist, what we're really looking at is indeterminate rates. That's really kind of what you're looking at. Well, we call them recall rates. What we're really talking about is a radiologist has three options when he or she looks at a study. It's either positive, negative, or they need more information. And there are some radiologists that always need a lot of information, and some radiologists that don't need information, and they're good. It doesn't get a lot more complicated than that, although it isn't anywhere near that simple. When we look at data, yes, there is age stratification, but kind of the good news for the proposal that we mentioned is that in and among the 65 and older age group, the results, and we can certainly provide those for you, the differences in those strata are relatively low. What we do find when we compare it to private data, and certainly Mike has access to that, and we have access to that, is the recall rate is very high in relatively young people for the reasons that you mentioned. Their breasts are denser, and the most important thing we have is a previous study, and they aren't around in many cases. I have the feeling that in transient populations that the same thing happens as young people, that you get more recalls because you can't find the previous studies that were done, but we haven't really looked at that. So what we have that's different than the earlier proposal that sounds kind of similar is that we have a fairly homogeneous group, and we're not dependent upon a voluntary BI-RADS sort of participation. And that is, that when we define any index study that's followed by a given number of studies, we can extrapolate back that that was an indeterminate study because they asked for some more information, or it was a positive. And the positives are pretty well going to be relatively stable. So what did we find, and what do we find? We find huge variations. Rebecca was very kind to our colleagues, and I've worked with people like this, and I think some of us, they probably should not be reading mammograms. Although they probably don't make a lot of mistakes, it just takes them a long, long time to get there. And we see rates as high as 80% in some areas, and within communities that have, nearly everybody has a 9 to 10 rate. And I actually know some of your practices around here, and you're all doing just fine, okay? Now, and the thing is that, but in that community where you're seeing the same kind of people, in another radiology group or in another facility, you'll have double or more the amount of additional information that's necessary for those radiologists or diagnostic imagers to reach their level of confidence. And so what we're really saying is that there are some radiologists that have a level of confidence that seems to be appropriate for reading and interpreting diagnostic imaging, and there are some that probably shouldn't be. Now, is there an advert, and when you look at these high numbers, and we certainly will look at the low numbers and report those out as well, when we look at the high numbers, you begin whether asking to get lower will drive people into a behavior that they don't feel comfortable doing, and that certainly is a concern. Or that when you start to see the data, folks, you'll find that small institutions with relatively low volumes have a very much higher additional imaging rate. So what would that do to the rural areas that Roger talked about before and others? I think that, you know, in terms of policy, if we could make policy here, for my family, I'd probably identify centers of excellence. And with the digital imaging teleradiology, send them in. Radiologists in the middle of nowhere don't want to read mammograms anyway. So the fear of driving mammography from, you know, Chico, California to Sacramento, you know, is at least in my estimation, not a realistic concern. It's a concern, but not a realistic concern. What we'll give you is an insight into the terrific variation between imaging providers. Now, you say, well, wait a minute, that's kind of related, isn't it, to the amount of tumor discovery. And the nice thing is we have good Rebecca here, who wrote the article along with others, and they're really quite interesting. We could probably print it. On slide 3? What did I do? Okay. Well, this is very interesting because there's a point at which you can continue to add additional studies for callbacks or follow-ups or however you want to describe it, but you really don't get anywhere. And this is somewhere around 14%. So if, in fact, this committee or anyone on this committee would like to contribute a suggestion to us on what level we would like to set those thresholds, we can certainly do that. I think if I were to do that, it would probably be back of the envelope. But when we know now that after a given rate, you don't find any more cancers, you're in pretty good shape.
Is this the CMS population, or is this all?
This is all.
I thought we heard earlier that the numbers would be different in the CMS population.
The callback numbers will be lower, and in fact, they are. The callback numbers that we looked at are somewhere in the 7 to 8% range. So we're operating down here. So if you set if we're discussing where to set the threshold, I think that might be a discussion for another time. Should we set a threshold that experts suggest is realistic? Yes, of course we should.
But I thought you said you had data from that you could present from the Medicare population. Next slide.
Next slide.
Now, what we have here is kind of a peculiar, I didn't do this, radiologists don't do so. But what you see here is of 2,800 and some hospitals, there are some here, about half, that are below 8.5% national average for Medicare, and there's about 50% that are over, and there are some that are really over.
Really over.
The callback rate on the YF?
Yeah.
indeterminate rate or more follow-up studies, please.
Quick comment. Wait, I don't mean to be too...
Any help from the ACR would be welcome.
Please don't use that word follow-up.
Yeah.
Because that refers to patients who are in a short-term follow-up.
Right.
So we're going into this era of IT and all the electronic records. We don't want that over there. So I just wanted to...
I agree, and we've all grappled with it. Yeah. I noticed in yours it's called recall rate, and essentially if you really looked at recall rate, that measures a whole different thing. I mean, your compliant and your enrollees or your patients that you take care of are relatively well-educated and they're compliant and you have a program. That's a whole other issue as to when you find something abnormal, are you able to get them back? And that's not what we're looking at. We're really looking at indeterminate rates. So when you look at a case, you need more information. Some need a lot more than others, and that's what we're looking at. So we think it's clean. We'd like to take a look at it, get started on it, report it back to you, and let it change as time goes on. Please.
It's Kirk. Two quick questions. So how does the Medicare database tell recalls from short-term follow-up?
Short-term follow-up.
So you're just going to find it as something done on less than 6 months.
That's correct. Okay.
And then,
and we're seeing it less and less short-term follow-up, and we're seeing more and more definitive imaging studies. It's either MR or it's, biopsy or it's...
The remotely reads echoes, having anybody do the echo at the other end and then, send it to me to read, an echo clearly doesn't work. And mammography is the technical aspect of it is substantially less than the radiologist. I don't have a good sense for that.
Yeah, and the good news is, as Dr. Foreman indicated...
Okay, so clearly the reader is the dominant variable, not the performance.
So one other point is that we're including follow-up for diagnostic mammo or ultrasound, but not MRI in this measure.
And we intentionally left that out because during the time of the study that we collected and we attempted to collect the data from, MRI is not real well-defined, and I'm not so sure it's yet well-defined on when to use MRI in conjunction with an abnormal mammogram.
But, I had a question on this curve. It's a funny kind of curve because it sort of suggests, and maybe this is the fact in the real world, but it suggests there's a group of people who are just utterly lost in space. And I don't, you see a lot of variability in the clinical world, nobody can take their choice of that, but are there really a group of people who are lost in space who are just doing all the NQSA stuff and figured out all of that, are getting paid, have all these other things, but somehow are just as centers congenitally unable to read mammograms?
Yes.
Because that's what this is describing to me.
Who are these? What we'll see, and when we do this in the private sector in that population, in that whole population done that we were talking about, that means the non-Medicare population, I was totally surprised. And to answer your question, I thought, you'd have some variation like you do, but I can only conjecture that there are folks out there that are either motivated by churning,
right.
And then there are others that are so insecure that they always get additional films. Now, many of you have worked in radiology groups. I have. A couple of my partners had a double what my call back rate was.
Do you have any base for, numbers? Because I could imagine the 100% one is somebody that reads three a year, and they're going to call back all three because they don't know.
For small cases. Okay. Got minimum case counts on it.
Minimum level of
what? And what's the minimum?
It varies by the ratio level to get a I think we're at a 90% confidence level, so that we actually the case count has to be assessed. We have a lot of people at the low end and a lot of people at the high end,
I think,
and so the minimum case count actually varies by the ratio level, and we're working at a 90% confidence level.
We have about 1,000 cases, 1,000 confidence.
It doesn't look like a normal distribution to me. I mean, I understand you're doing some other funny graphing here, but...
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the way I put
it. It doesn't look like a normal distribution.
But what you do see, though, is you do see some outliers that are way out there. Unexpected to me as it might be to you. I mean, how can you be that far off?
Is that just fraud?
Well...
Hold on.
Please give your name when you make a comment.
Why aren't these tiny practices that are seeing three cases a week? I mean, I'm not trying to defend them, but
I want to clarify. These do not include facilities who have a small entity. They have to have had at the tail there, they have to have done at least 45.
45 what?
Screening mammograms.
During a year.
It's nothing.
I mean, once the resident movement in the practice had, you know, they did screening mammograms out of convenience, and you'd see a patient once a week. I mean, so if they have you're basically dealing with 140 practices at the tail, all of whom may account for less than 0.1% of the population. So, I mean, they're out there, but I wouldn't necessarily imply fraud. It's probably more likely that they're doing it.
We're not implying fraud.
No, I know, but people are saying that even pecuniary instincts are causing this. I have a feeling that most of the tail are probably radiologists who don't want to be doing mammography, and they're just doing it because the setup is in the office.
Can I ask for a clarification? Is this a computer-generated curve, or is this an actual curve? And the specific question I have is, are there really sites that are recalling 100% and 0%, or is this just forced to...
It's real data. There's a real facility. The max is 100%.
100%.
That's on the same data. No, they started with this 45 screening mammograms.
And somebody with
45...
And I would only say for some perspective, Howard, and I know you find it a little bit tough to believe, I can introduce you to somebody. You know, in the private sector, high-volume facilities that will have 80%. I've not seen any at 100%, but some that have 80%. We're talking high-volume providers, and high-volume providers that have close to 0%, which I would worry about. The deal is, let's look. Now, would I have produced that graph in a little bit of a different way? Sure, and it might have been a little easier. But I can guarantee, as a radiologist, you put a lot of work into this thing, but still, I'm passionate about this. There are radiologists that have to have a lot more information than other radiologists, and they're out there in significant numbers, and we got to identify them.
Okay, wait a second. Carl?
I agree with you, John, but I'm again confused. If the MQSA says an individual has to read 500, this would imply that somebody's reading for 100 facilities to get that. Do you know that or not? Where does 45 reconcile with the FDA minimum of 500?
You know, Carl, I have the same question, and I suspect that there are a fair number of radiologists that are not qualified in their reading.
Part of the breast cancer surveillance consortium, it seemed that there were a lot of low-volume doctors, and there are a lot of low-volume doctors, but in fact doctors read at many facilities, and so on a practical level, you're only assessing a mammogram if they're reading in the elderly, and you have no idea if they're making up their volume in other places. So I kind of agree
with non-Medicare patients. I mean,
Those are the elderly.
It could have been, but it could have been in their same facility, just a lot of non-Medicare patients.
Exactly. So it's very difficult.
On the back of the envelope, you feel that Medicare is probably 30 to 40% or 30% of your mammography volume. That'd be 90, you know. And there isn't a radiologist that I know that isn't, you know, certified of someone coming after you. If you're reading two a week, I mean, basically that's 2 a week.
Looking at the distribution of your data, the 99th percentile distribution in the recall rate is 24.9%. And I can give you six separate references that have gotten exactly that 25%. So I think the 1% outlier which we're looking at is either a data issue or it's a... You know, I don't believe, or represents a couple of doctors that are, you know, doing something odd. I think that's unlikely. And if your quality metric is only measuring that one doctor, it's not doing
well. And I understand that. And I would just say that, you know, offline I'll share some of the
blinded parking commission we have, and it really does happen. I mean, it really.
But that's not the benefit of this measure. I mean, it might be a benefit to you to identify those few really, really extreme cases.
The benefit of this measure is to find.
Exactly.
Right.
You don't need this measure to identify them. You can identify them in a lot of other ways without having an NQF measure.
So do we have a proposed range, though, for this measure?
Are we supposed to sign off on the measure or sign off on the measure with a range?
Well, if there is a range that we, is there a range that's being proposed?
But you're saying you're applying a standard that half of your facilities would fail. Am I confused about that? What was the 10 to 14% you just cited?
So that I understand, but the question is, what are those numbers? Below what is not acceptable, above what is not, or is not good?
We haven't done that
for CMS, but for NQF, the question is whether or not we're going to approve a measure that doesn't have a threshold. Right.
Just to be clear, not all measures need.
No, I understand, but we
endorse, for example, in a kinesiology rate. No one knows what the exact rate we have is. The question is it useful for benchmark reporting to begin to see where it is.
I completely understand that, but we've had a discussion back and forth about a lot of different ranges, and what I'm trying to get clarity on is there a range being proposed with this measure, and if so, what is it, or is there not a range? I understand that there could be. That's not the question. The question is there one being proposed with this measure?
There is one that's proposed, and the discussion today has prompted us to take another look at it.
What is the one that's been proposed?
10% in 10-14.
Within 10-14 is the range that's been proposed? So 8.5 and 9 would be outside of that range.
If it says in here 10-14,
right.
Realizing that doesn't make any sense.
I know, that's what I'm trying to get at.
So it's just in
story.
So it has no relevance for our discussion, is that correct? So it has no relevance for the discussion.
So there is no range then? We're going around in circles.
Stop asking a question.
Sorry, this is
just
one of the issues that has brought up. You talk about this kind of education thing. I mean, CMS, one of the things that does, right, find your data, and it gives you a good job, and you can think of ways to and all that. But I think you've done that, and it's not going to make a change. But it does that, a little bit lower than on the many regulations are the effects. So that's why it comes a little bit lower than the expected, which is a winter expected. CMS and the stratified data shows a little bit lower level. Now, we haven't defined well, so it's the low end or how much.
So I think we need to be clear on this. First of all, I don't know what literature you're speaking of that says 10-14%. So the large study, the BCSC study, was an average of 9.8%. So that's not 10-14%. The European data is all single digits. And I've seen one study that has a median of about 10 and I think a 75th percentile of, 16%? So I don't know of a study, and it isn't cited here. So I don't think we should say the literature says 10-14% unless the literature does say 10-14%, which would mean that someone can cite that.
ARC has an old number, and I don't know if that's the number
that
you're citing.
Not 10-14. The interquartile range was, I think, 6.4 to 4.6 to.
I have it right here. It's 6.4 to 13.3. It's a 50%. 50% of radiologists fall into that. If you use your numbers, 25% fall into that.
I think he's also age adjusted. Have you dropped through that? I think they're age adjusted. Are you looking at age adjusted?
So is it fair to say that the 10 to 14% is not relevant to this measure and not relevant to this discussion? So, right? So we can leave that behind? All right. Okay. Other questions of the committee to the measure developer?
Right. Just two broad comments. One point has already been made, but in terms of the potential impact of this, you'd have to know the volumes of the studies being performed in the extreme to know how useful this measure would be to TMS or overall quality. And the second observation I would make is that using different kinds of data sets in far larger populations, if I look at published data for cardiac procedures, these extremes don't look bad at all.
Believe me, I know.
0 to 100?
Sometimes they go negative. For example, the published data on cardiac procedures based on, Medicare market. So these are hundreds of thousands of patients, show customarily 5 to 10-fold differences in non-zero rates. And a well-known published example of one referral region that is 3 times higher than a referral region 60 miles away. So I'm surprised these look pretty good.
So, John, these are facility numbers, right?
Yes, and they can be broken down into individuals, but we are instructed not to do that.
Right.
When you look at it, however, when we look at it in the private sector,
But this metric you're presenting is relatively unfair because there is no facility standard with a recall. It's an individual metric. So it's a little bit unfair to say those people are really, and those facilities are stupid because they may be going to somebody who's very good at reading, but
exactly.
Doing 45
and by extrapolation, we simply say that there's a quality issue if you know that your partners are not reading,
right.
Or in the aggregate,
correct.
If you're doing
right.
Well, so you may not be blaming on something systemic within the facility.
But it's a little misleading.
It is a little. I'll give you a little card on that.
All right.
No, go ahead. The thing I take from these, and I saw another similar curve, is you can't draw final conclusions from these data, but you can say, well, there's a sector of interest out there at that far end, whether it's because they're very conscientious, whether it's because they're this or that or the other. So, the ones in the middle, maybe you don't have to worry so much about and use your resources on the same way you use resources on the people. And that's as far as you can go with it.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone can take a deep breath now. Other comments on this specific measure?
I weighed something when I reviewed it. Are you guys, do you have some measure of the ability of these new CPT codes to differentiate screening from diagnostic exams?
There's separate codes.
Right. Do you know the ability to differentiate screening from diagnostic using those codes against some reference standard like data in the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium, data in self-reported mammography, that sort of thing?
To see how
we did a paper that was published in Medicare a couple of years ago that looked at the classifications of mammogram using CPT codes, using CMS data compared to Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium. So it certainly would be something that you guys could repeat using your new codes.
Right, we have it from the old
code. If we were using it, then I would say you don't have a measure here.
Because you don't believe in the validity of
the ability to differentiate from screening to diagnostic. So I'm assuming your new codes are going to be better. I'm asking you if you have looked at that. I'm suggesting that might be useful to do. It requires some chart abstraction, or the simplest thing to do. It wouldn't be expensive. The simple thing that you could do is in states that have a SEER tumor registry or breast cancer surveillance consortium registry, you can do it in New Mexico, you can do it in San Francisco, you can do it in Washington. They've currently done the linkage for you. So the linkage is done between the breast cancer surveillance consortium and the Medicare data. So you just have to put in this request, and if you speak to me after, I'll tell you who to do it, and then you can find out the data.
And it's
very possible that CMS's Office of Research and Demonstration Authority probably actually be looking at that because they do have that partnership with the SEER registry. So it might be as simple as me having to talk to, say, Jerry Riley or somebody and say, hey, Jerry, if you look at this lately.
It's not it's the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium. So it's Rachel Ballard Barbash, it's under her. Diana Migley Reddy is the statistical coordinating center person in Seattle. That's who you need to talk to.
So that would be an important point of clarification if we would decide to
prove this. If we would decide, they haven't shown us that these measures can be used.
Okay. Carl?
Just one quick one, John. So, and you can answer this, yes, no, I don't know. So you have information at that end of leaders who are MQSA certified with these recalls, and if somebody's reading is not MQSA certified with these recalls.
That's correct.
Okay,
you know their personal individual MQSA?
That's correct. Mike, how far am I wrong?
No, I mean, I just look at the curve, right, and 2801 is there, and the total sample set is 2957. So this tail that we're spending all this time talking about, this is like 30 guys.
Yeah.
Not 30 guys,
it's 30 facilities, so 60 guys, because, you know, there's two radiologists.
That curve right there represents 7 million mammograms.
Right, no, I'm talking about number of facilities.
That last tail?
Yeah.
It's around 10,000.
Right, so you look at that list of facilities, and, I mean, this is what we do from the plan perspective all the time. Is, you know, just back of the envelope, you set that line at a standard deviation or a standard deviation and a half off, and you go, okay, I want to look at the guys that are, you know, sub 3, and I want to look at the guys that are, you know, 25. Over 20, and I'm going to end up with 200 facilities to look at. And that's what's going to tell you, because CMS or any organization, we can't be in the position Rebecca's talked about where half of the facilities in America don't meet the measure. That doesn't serve anybody any good.
You look at the end.
Just look at the tails and
improve
and you know.
So I'd like to raise one issue for discussion that we talked about this morning with the recall rate measure. The question is there value, if we were to approve this, in having essentially a recall rate measure that doesn't include a cancer detection rate or positive predictive value measure? So that is, should we go back and ask CMS if they wanted a Medicare population measure for recall rate to also address cancer detection rate?
Steve Gamble, I was impressed this morning in the discussion for each of the first four measures. They were saying this alone is not good. You've got to take it in conjunction with other measures. And this alone is what we're talking about.
Yes.
So I don't understand how we can strive to have a quote combined measure, or call it what you will, for first three, and then say, oh, but in this case, because the data is easy to get, we're just going to do this alone. So I would say we are obligated to go back to the makers of this measure and say, do you have the data? Can you do what we are talking about in that set of first four measures as well as this single measure?
Okay. Thank you. Other comments on that topic or other topics?
CMS doesn't hold the BI-RADS.
No.
And so that becomes a drop-off question. If you assume everybody with Medicare that comes 045 has an insurance coverage or does not have an insurance coverage issue, then you would expect a drop-off of 045s that don't get follow-on care, assuming they're continuously enrolled or whatever, to, you know, the drop-off should be trivial. You would hope. So that would, you would end up with cancer detection down the street because you have the path.
Don, please.
Maybe for the measure developers.
Don, name.
Don Rucker. You know, to the, I think some of the our requirements from the NQF process, I think the first one on importance, do we have a sense of the area under the tail here in terms of the requirement for the importance of this? We're asking a lot of people to do a lot of reporting, as far as I can understand here, that has a cost to it.
It's all captured claims data,
so it's sort of quote unquote free.
Yeah, all paid claims.
Yeah.
Now that's the easy. It still doesn't address the important.
Right, exactly.
So all right, it's easy to do.
But then maybe just on the importance question, I don't have, is that 1A or is it one of the, it's pretty high here, just the raw importance metric.
if we can understand that, because I've been...
I think Don's referring to 1D, which is the demonstration of quality problems or opportunity for improvement, so you make an argument of tail from investors.
Yeah, correct.
Sorry, the tail, 99% of all,
but it's a facility-level measure, so the question is how many facilities does that 1,000 case represent?
Well, the 95th percentile, 17-1, so you have 200, right? You have 5% on top out of 3,000. It's 150 on the top, 150 on the bottom, right? If you went 5th percentile and 95th percentile. So 300 facilities, that's 5% of hospitals in America. That's pretty
significant. 1% of 3,000 is 36 facilities.
Hospitals don't have billing.
30 facilities. It's a 99%.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Right. If you want, that was a 25. Right. At the 95th percentile, you cut it at 17. If you cut it at 17 and 5, you're up to 300 hospitals. 5th percentile and 95th percentile, you're up.
I like that.
300 hospitals.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I don't usually look at 95th percentile, but here,
okay. Okay. But you, Troy, you look like you're about to raise your hand. No.
No, I was just pointing at the data. I'm fine.
All right. So I think now we need to move towards decision, voting, and it's complicated. I'm not sure how best to approach it because it seems like we have the four measures this morning that we want to consider as a group, and then our decision on that might affect our decision on this afternoon's measure. So what I'd propose is we have a brief discussion, try and limit it to about 10 minutes or so, on which of the four we would, on the merits of approving them individually this morning or of grouping them. I'll throw out a straw man proposal based on what I thought we heard this morning, is that the measured developer wants to see them approved or presumably not approved, but approved as a group. And I think from our discussion, the consensus was from the four this morning, the three that would make sense to bring together, to consider together, would be the recall rate, the cancer detection rate, and PPV2. So
the PPV2 on the diagnostic?
PPV2, yeah, the real PPV2, right?
Not
the
diagnostic. Right, not PPV1.
So, yeah.
Right, okay.
So I think that was, if I'm off, speak up, please, but I think that was kind of where we were thinking based on the morning's discussion. So I don't know then how we go about voting for that without voting for the individual measures.
You still need to vote for the individual measures, make recommendations, for conditions, whatever the case.
And the condition could be only with the other two.
Yes, although I think again, it's really the question of how the three at the end of the day get presented together. But I still don't think we have clarity on whether or not it's possible.
Right. Okay. Yes, please, Judy.
I actually, Judy, have a quick question. The one thing that I do like about the first PPV2 or 1 is that it's based on tissue diagnosis, so it's a real outcome rather than asking for follow-up, which seems squishier to me. And so I don't know if there's a way to change or recommend that the second one move to tissue diagnosis or... I guess I still
it is. The second one is tissue diagnosis.
It's just recommended to get a tissue diagnosis rather than the actual tissue itself, which to me is a difference in terms of, I think, my philosophy of quality measures in general is that we should be pushing towards more outcome-based things and measuring more things that really change health rather than the indeterminate processy things that we sometimes focus on. And so to me, tissue sounds more definitive than, oh, I recommend that you go get a biopsy.
So you're speaking for, the denominator.
I like the second one, but the part I don't like about it is that it just recommends. It doesn't say get the tissue.
Judy, this is Rebecca Smith-Feynman. That discussion, your point has been raised by others, and the argument, not that I endorse it or not, is that from the quality point of view, all the radiologists can do is recommend that something else happened, that there are a lot of factors outside that doctor's control in terms of whether the person chooses to follow up at that facility or any facility, and that it would be better to separate the component that the doctor can take responsibility for from the part that the doctor can't. And that's why it was to adopted that as a recommendation rather than what actually happened.
It's also the issue of it's
practice.
You know, in terms of positive predictive value, it's the positive predictive value of a positive mammogram.
Right.
Right. So that's why a positive mammogram is a 4 or 5, which is a recommendation for, you know, biopsy, and how, what percentage of those positive mammograms are actually positive. So I think we can't redefine a commonly used measure, the PPD2.
But why not push towards, I mean, I understand that it's, you know, the doctor doesn't necessarily have control over that, but that's also a reason why doctors say they can't address obesity. You know, there's still, that it helps push the system, health systems and payers, as well as providers, to a higher standard than what's already there. And maybe we're not there yet in terms of data, but if we are close, I guess I would argue for doing, getting the tissue rather than just the recommendation to push that a little further.
Wait, Roger, and then Carl, sorry.
Rogers, no, I'm very sympathetic with what you say, but I think that that's an argument for another table. Because what's being done here is a measure that works on what radiologists do and can do, and the point's been made that they can't get the biopsy except the interventional guys may. But that aside, the actual thing, the step of getting the outcome, would be a separate measure, and that would use PPV3,
right.
I think.
Right.
And maybe we all come back in a year and go after the primary care guys. I think it really is a measure of quality at the care delivery level rather than at the diagnostic level. It's a different measure.
So, what I'm
so
okay,
can I just
go
one other point of clarification? So, let's take one assumption. When could this come back to this, to, if it were not passed today, when would it be potentially re-eligible to come up again?
It's not clear. When we have another project with the right expertise, we could review it. So I don't see any.
So we don't know when the next imaging efficiency group would meet.
I suspect, given how important this area is, it's probably within the next 2 years, but I wouldn't say it's less than that.
So maybe what we should do is vote on this measure in isolation first, because if it passes in isolation, we're done. And
each of them,
the first four, and then if they don't pass in isolation, come back and vote again with the grouping. And if they don't pass there, then they haven't passed. I don't think I can think of another way to do it.
And voting is my.
Endorse, not endorse.
Simple majority.
Recommendation,
right.
Too.
But, I mean, we're looking for simple majority here, or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, again, if it's a split vote, we'll just present
they
it to
they
the public.
Present
the, so.
The
okay.
Total for that. So let's... Carl,
I just want to make one quick statement. In this country, 2 and 3 are almost the same. So the vast majority of PPV2s will have tissue. The vast majority. So it's not like...
Well, then why not go for tissue?
Well, because it hasn't been proposed, so we can't
vote
on it.
What Rebecca said is correct. The 2 is the cognitive part of the radiologist, and the surgeon may say, get out of here. You know what he's talking about. Go away from me. So she doesn't get it. No, this is... I'm hyperbolic, but this is scenario. So you're really judging the cognitive thinker on doing a 4 or 5... After that, they can't really control what happens, but it's very close.
But also, we don't have a PPV3 measure to discuss or vote on, so...
And it may wind up being that that's a research recommendation. And just to follow up on Judy's point, there's a strong interest in measures that get at shared accountability. It doesn't need to jump to flexibility. If the end game really is, if women with positive mammograms get the outcome we expected, then that's, I think, a very reasonable expectation. I just don't know that the measures in front of us today offer.
So
to clarify one more time, we're going to go and vote on these individually. If they're voted up, then they're in. If they're voted down, then we will take them in
as a group,
as theoretic aggregate.
With the condition that we would approve them if they were proposed to the pair.
Okay.
And then they may or may not pass that
right.
way. Okay, so do you want to call for the voting, or should I call for the...
Well,
Anthony, okay. I just want to bring your attention to the screen.
Sure.
We do have an NQF just kind of formed to capture the process that you're going through. Sarah's been working on getting on the steering committee comments and recommendations covering the black discussion points, response from major developers, and response from the public, which at the end of discussing the model information will open it up to the public to see if there's any responses. But on the other left-hand side, we have NQF's criteria for looking at measures. They have importance, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, and our plan is, as we're going through, I'll collect the steering committee's votes on that. So we're looking at how many people voting
on each and an overall?
Okay. Well, taking
the four.
For the four main criteria.
Right, so there's five votes on each one. Okay.
And then, I guess, depending on how things lay out, if there's comments that are needed to justify some of the recommendations,
And these are binary votes on each of these five measures?
Yes,
no?
Yes.
Okay.
No. I'm sorry. It's recommendations specifically on the criteria are high, medium, low.
Okay, so do you have a matrix to capture the 4x4 and then the 1x2? Okay.
Yeah, we're just going to take this out and put it in.
Okay. So, all right, so now here we are. We're voting on measure number one. Cancer detection rate, we've discussed it this morning. We're voting on it in isolation, and we need people to raise their hands. This is steering committee only, members. We need you to raise your hands under the importance. So how many people want to rate the importance as high?
C.
I like high.
Well, this, it's high up here, so.
Here's the overall.
So this is all of the different subparts of I together. So the options are high, middle, or low.
Can you read the evaluation criteria, the main ones, before you ask for a vote?
I will once we count here. The importance everybody knows, I think. I'll read it again while we're counting. Importance, extent to which the specific measure
folks.
We got the count.
Okay. But if anyone everyone has this, but it's extent to which the specific measure focus is important for making significant gains in healthcare quality, defined by the six dimensions of the IOM, and improving health outcomes for a specific high impact aspect of healthcare where there's variation in or overall for performance. Okay, so that's the importance. Now we've got, you've got, how many people would like to rate that M for middle rating? Three, four?
Like four?
Four. How many people would like to rate that low for low? I know, but I figure we need to say it. Okay, so next we're going on to criterion number two. Scientific acceptability, extent to which the measure as specified produces consistent, in parentheses reliable, and credible, in parentheses valid, results about the quality of care when implemented. Remember, we're voting on this measure now in isolation. How many people want to give it a high rating? None. How many people want to give it a middle rating? All right, and how many people would like to give it a low rating? We should have an easy way to calculate that number. Okay. And now the next is, I'm not going to read these definitions with every measure, by the way. But there was a request to read them. So, next is usability, which is the extent to which intended audiences can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision making. Again, we're voting on measure number one in isolation at this point. High?
Like three.
Middle?
Like six.
And low.
Can I just clarify? When you read the second one, you said as written.
As written.
But you didn't say for this usability as written.
Oh, I thought I did, but we're voting in this thing as written.
Only as written.
Only as written now, because we agreed we'd just vote on them as written first and then talk about the modifications.
Okay.
we redo the voting for you?
You want to change your vote?
I want to change my vote.
Oh, we can do that just by counting. Do you want to shift from what to what?
High and middle.
Okay. So that would be 2 high and 7 middle then. Okay, and the last category is F, for feasibility, extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and can be implemented for performance measurement. Again, this is measure number 1 in isolation. How many votes for high?
Like 4 or 5.
Okay, how many votes for middle or moderate?
Yeah.
Okay, and now we have an overall.
Low.
Oh, low, sorry. One. How many low? I miscounted. How many low? Who wants to vote low?
Should be.
It should be a couple.
You can abstain.
Okay. Okay. So, and the important thing is the MQF will report the numbers of the votes. They're not going to come to a binary decision.
Yeah.
So now we want to have an overall recommendation, and that's either yes or no. So you vote either to approve, to recommend this for endorsement or not. So who would like to recommend this for endorsement as is, as written?
In isolation.
Okay, who would vote to recommend, not to recommend this as, you know. Okay. So that's this measure. So we'll go through, we're going to do the same process now for measures 2, 3, and 4, and then we can come back and talk about a proposed either conditional approval or and what the condition might be as a group. So let's go to measure 2, which is screening mammography, positive predictive value, PPV2, which as a footnote, I think should really be PPV1, but as long as we are voting on it as it's written and defined in the measure. Okay, we are on the first category, which, again, is the importance. Who wants to give it a high? Who would like to give it a middle or moderate?
It's like 11.
And who would like to give it a low? None.
Zero.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to the second category, which is scientific acceptability of the measure property. Would like to give it a high? 0. Who would like to give it a middle? And who would like to give it a low? Looking for 2, 3, 4. Like 4.
Is it 4? 5, sorry.
Okay. We keep getting different totals.
Are there 20 people?
How many people are there here?
Are individuals abstaining? Okay, no.
There's only 20 here. So I think we need to recount that one.
Okay.
Because we came with a number higher than the total number of people.
Probably the 17. I can't see. I don't know.
Yeah.
Scott, if you'd like to be in the middle.
Okay. So raise your hand again if you want to give this a middle.
This is a good lesson in statistics.
By red
14. I get 14.
Came out by red 3.
14. And who would give it a low? I saw 14, yes. Who would give it a low? 1, 2, 3, 4.
5.
Okay, 5. So that gets the right number. Thank you. Okay, so the next category is category 3, which is usability. Who would like to give this a high? High for usability? No. Howie? Okay. One high. Who would like to give it a middle? I got 14.
14.5 it is.
I got 14, but...
Okay.
And who would like to give it a low?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Three? Yeah, so maybe it was 14.
Okay.
So,
what's the predictive value of that?
I think we need to ask everybody to vote. You have to make a decision. You can't really abstain. You can.